Welcome to episode 131 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read JLA, Rock of Ages by Grant Morrison. And now, the cast begins.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another Morrison episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andrew, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week, in our Thanos vs. Darkseid series, we read Rock of Ages. This is from 1990. Oh, that's what the 97-90 is. It's from 1997 and 1998. Written by Grant Morrison with art by Howard Porter. I was wondering why the hell our notes said that 97 and 98 were included issues in this trade, and I just realized they're not. That's the year that it was printed. Man.
Nice one.
Woo! Just figuring it out on the air. So, yeah. This is our Darkseid entry into our Thanos versus Darkseid argument. So, what did you guys think of this one?
Morrison-y.
Yeah. It's definitely a Grant Morrison book. But I think this does a really good job of showing the differences between Thanos and Darkseid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is that Thanos is a hands-on kind of guy, and Darkseid is not.
Yeah, Darkseid's very much, I want to control and have my lieutenants carry out my will.
Right.
I think Darkseid's downfall here is that trust in his lieutenants. The sod was taken out by Batman, and was a granny goodness box, or the granny box, whatever mm-hmm. whatever they called it,
got the taken grandmother box.
That's right, grandmother box. Got taken out by Wonder Woman, and it's like, okay, well, now it's just you, Darkseid.
And Darkseid could definitely, I mean, he can hold his own against yeah. anybody in the Justice League. We see that when he fights with Wonder Woman. But he takes his eyes off her, and she strikes back.
Rah. So yeah, I agree with you guys. I think the best description for this is that it's very Grant Morrison. And as soon as I put this down, I sat there and I'm like, man, I just got Morrisoned. In the way that I want to call it a thing. I want to call it Morrisoning. Like, because I've had this happen to me on multiple occasions when people have said, oh man, you got to read this. Grant Morrison's work in insert title here. It's some of the best in the whole run of that character. You gotta read it. You really gotta pick it up and read it. So we pick it up and read it, and then it's just like, what? Why are there four timelines? What the? Going back? What is this? What is this, like, Mamarod weird planet that they stop at for no necessary reason in the plot? Just they wanted to put in more Morris slang technobabble kind of crap? You know what?
And what is it? Wonder World?
Wonder World, yes.
Wonder World, that's what it is. With the World Agog on Mamarod. That what is it, what do they say? It's a global fortress traversing the entire space-time frontier at hypertemporal speeds, unimaginable to even you, Flash. Come on. Come on.
It's also like the last bastion against the dark something Mageddon, right?
Yes.
Like it's supposed to instill this sense of the epic. But I kind of feel like Morrison uses a lot of big words as a replacement for actual thought or science. And it's frustrating.
Yeah. So I think that's what it means to get Morrisoned. There's like a whole issue worth, I think, out of this that could have been just cut.
Yeah, it's the whole, it's, what is it? I'm looking at the issue right now. Let me.
Is it like 12? Number 12 or 13? I don't know. After they get flung
yeah,
into space-time, yeah.
It's like being Whedoned, except instead of your favorite character dying off, some of your brain cells get killed.
Well, at least from, okay, the Whedoning, I understand because it has function for the story. It draws out an emotional response from the viewer. Like, it has a function and a purpose in whatever story it's in. It's almost never recklessly done, you know? But here it's like, it almost feels like, I'm Graham Morrison. I'm going to invent some random fuck world at the end of time, traversing hyper whatever the fuck at the speed of who gives a shit. Come on, what are you doing? We're accelerating the speed where our entire physical structure will be converted into hyperlight information.
I think the best one was after that they get back to the future and somewhere, I think it was like Aquaman or maybe it was Kyle Rayner, was like, as soon as our light speed, I think forms, or he maybe said essences, and I think the word he might have used was congeal.
Yeah.
we'll be stuck in the future. What? I mean, okay. Granted. I feel like this is some of Grant Morrison's most unpolished work compared to the other stuff of his that we've read. So, I mean, I don't want to say he's a bad writer because I know he's done some really amazing stuff and I like a lot of it. At the same time, I just feel like this was very... I'm actually just going to go straight into a note that I have written down here. I think it's because this is a Cape comic through and through. And when you have a Cape comic, I think there's a lot of blunt force reading, you could say, where you're supposed to just kind of get what's happening. And there's a lot of action and moving story. And, I mean, of course, many Cape comics break that mold. We've read some really excellent stuff. But here, it's like we're supposed to get it, and you do get it, but it's overly complicated because it's trying to make you think of, like, this epic, swirling, mindfuck of a story. Whereas a lot of Grant Morrison's other work, you read it, and you're like, I'm not sure I understood that, but I don't think I was supposed to. And that's what makes it okay when he does that. When you're like, huh, I'm not getting something, but it was really meta and cool. I didn't feel like this was meta or cool. This was just like, gah.
I'm just going to put in big words right now.
Well, I think that there's parts that are cool. Like, I think the whole time when they're in the future world that's being ruled by Darkseid, that's cool. And then the part where they're fighting Luthor and the Injustice Gang, that's cool too. It's all this weird, like, time travel-y stuff that surrounds it that just makes it really freaking confusing. And then, like, the epilogue part of the story where Metron, like, goes to the Source Wall and he's, like, goes and meets that... The guy's name is Adam One, the giant, like, rust-colored guy. It's like, what is this telling us, right? Yeah. And maybe it's foreshadowing for other things because there's that little bit in issue 15 where there's that guy in the background.
Oh yeah, fuck.
Who kind of looks like Ultraman or something. It's not Ultraman. It's one of the Superman offshoots that I think we see in Final Crisis.
Uberman?
No, I think Uberman has a big U on his chest.
Yeah. Where is it? I don't know, whatever.
It's on page 37.
The one with like the three vertical lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't remember what if he's Ultraman or Uberman or what, but and don't we see him in Final Crisis? I mean, that's a few years off from this.
Yeah, he is one of the alternates.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? It's like all this stuff is confusing, and then there's this character named Hourman. And so every time I thought of him, I thought of the guy who takes the medicine to become strong for an hour. Yes.
Well, and they are related. That goes okay. Like this Hourman enters into JSA lore. Like this Hourman explains, like, you are the first Hourman who invented Miraclo, and then your son inherits the mantle, and somebody will inherit his mantle, and you are one of the few heroes whose mantle will be inherited this far out. Like 85,000 okay. later's 85,000 years later or whatever, that Hourman is still an inspiration.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't know. He's never done anything yet to merit that, I think. But fuck it, who knows? Maybe just the name is cool and it sticks. Because their power sets are not relevant together at all. You know, like, this guy's a time traveler. Doesn't have anything to do with Miraclo. But that it should make you think of him because they are supposedly related.
Okay. They have similar costumes and colors and stuff. Yeah. So I kind of figured.
But I know. I completely agree with you. Like, everything in here feels really cool, but maybe it's just the way it's transitioned. You know? Or, like, just something about it just feels clunky or unnatural or unnecessary. Like, even when Kyle Rayner first lands to the future, and that, like, what is it, that little dude, that normal-sized little dude, like, is talking to him and walking him through the museum and, like,
oh, the stuff guy that's, like, all white except with the blue face.
Yeah, like, even that scene, I kind of like that. Like, look at all this shit. Look at this crazy thing. Look at this crazy fucking thing. And Kyle's like, whoa, what the fuck is going on here, bro? I just came from the weird future with the dude with the Hour Man and this, like, weird-looking avant-garde statue that he called a Whirligog or whatever the fuck. What's going on here? And he's like, yeah, it's cool. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. It's fine. Like, some of the scenes here I really did like, and they felt, like, natural and weird in an awkward kind of way. But then, like, hyperlight information and congealing hard light projections in bodies of stuff. I don't know.
You know what was actually done really well? Just what you just said reminded me of it. He's called the Black Racer, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
His whole dialogue leading up to the end where he's like explaining what's happening that you don't actually see, and then he goes, and then I circled around again. And he's like, kind of, it gives this impression that he's spiraling down to the point as we're getting those, like, T minus whatever time this is going to happen. And that worked really well because it did that thing where we're not seeing what's happening, because we see Wonder Woman get killed and she yells Darkseid's name. And then this thing is like, and then she called me, she whispered my name, one I hadn't heard in a long time. And it's like, we never see her do that. What is it? It's a mystery. So that was cool. And then, except when they actually showed him and he looked like an Olympic skier, that was no good. But that's another issue.
He looks much better. He looks much cooler in Final Crisis.
Yeah. He shows up in 52 as well, yeah?
I don't know.
Remember.
Wait, 52
I think when David and I both go, that's us saying no, but we don't want to say no.
Wait, hold on.
Well, no, I was like genuinely trying to think back if he was in 52, but I don't think so.
With the two flashes and they have to stop the bullet, or they bring the bullet to the future or something.
That's Final Crisis.
Oh, that's Final Crisis? Okay, sorry then.
Yeah.
It's so easy to mix these all up.
It's all good. It's completely understandable to get mixed up after reading.
No idea what I've read. Okay. But yeah, he was really well written.
Yeah, that was cool, the whole spiraling in thing. So the other thing I want to talk about here is character in a teen book. I think is this not the first time we've read JLA?
I think this is the first time we have read the JLA book. We've read books with the JLA.
Yeah, this is the first time, right?
This is the first time, I think, we've read other team books, but not JLA before, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So, like, the other thing I feel like happens when you get all this techno babble kind of confusing time, parallel dimension, multiple, whatever, is that there's so much time and space devoted to that stuff that there's not room for things like character development. Because I was sitting here and I was done reading this and I was like, other than their power sets, I can't really think of a difference between Wally West, Arthur Curdy, and Aztec. Like, in terms of their the power set's obviously different, and that defines a certain percentage of their personality, but otherwise, they're pretty much the same person. They're all, like, the same person.
It's the same way with the Injustice Gang, too. Yes. They kind of meld together. So this is a funny thing that happened to me while I was reading. So I'm reading it, and I'm like, man, this is a weird-ass take on Joker. Just this doesn't feel right. And then I was like, oh, it's Plastic Man. Okay. That's why he was acting weird. And then they cut to actual Joker, and I'm like, what the hell's wrong with Joker?
He's still acting weird.
I just, that bothered me so much. I don't know why, but it's just like, this is the weirdest version of Joker I've ever read. Something about him, even when after it was revealed that he was Plastic Man and it was actual, then it went back to the actual Joker, I just could not figure out what was weird about this.
Is it guilt by association? Because I know how you feel about Plastic Man.
You know, okay, this is the first time I've read Plastic Man and was like, this is actually kind of cool. He's just such a... He's like the long-lost Wonder Twin to me sometimes. He's the third one.
He's so goddamn doofusy.
But in this, he was okay. Like, I felt like his stupid-ass personality fit in the storyline pretty well.
Well, and he chooses, I feel like in this, he's still goofy and doofusy and all that kind of stuff, but he chooses his matchup well. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, the JLA show up to fight the Injustice Gang. Wonderful name. And he picks Cersei to fight, or Cersei picks him, or whatever. Like, but that matchup's perfect. Turn him into a pig, great. He's a pig. He's a fucking Plastic Man, though. You know, like, whatever she can turn him into, he can just be.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes his fight seem way more entertaining. There was only like one or two times when I groaned at him, you know? Like, oh, God, that's annoying. When, like, he's braying like an ass, and then his face looks like an ass.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's a little extra on point, isn't there, Plastic Man? I don't know. That's the only thing with this is there's like no character development. And then when things do happen that kind of like advance the character or the idea of the character, it only created more confusion for me. Like, the best example of that I can think of is Martian Manhunter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really cool when they were going through the maze and he was like, I'll just reconfigure my brain to be as crazy fucking as Joker. And then I'll be able to see through this maze the way that Joker would see through this maze. Because in his mind, it would make perfect sense, except he's fucking crazy, right? Like, that's kind of a neat idea. He's a shapeshifter. Why can't he reshape his brain to fit that crazy? Awesome, yeah. See through the maze, it's a cinch, right? Except then I'm like, but wait. Why doesn't he just solve all the crimes? Why doesn't he just reshape his brain to be like Lex Luthor, figure everything out in 2 seconds and stop it? Like, what? You create a Deus Ex Machina and then just leave it there.
They need to find... Well, they had... That was like the pre-one. There were more coming, right?
Huh?
There were more Deus Ex Machinas coming.
Yes.
That's why you couldn't...
there are many of them in here. I think it even is like a couple of pages later we get a mother box, which is a walking like Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah.
It's almost a literal Deus Ex Machina. This is a machine that's so advanced it's as though it were God, and hey, it's even in the shape of a box. Let's make it easy. Just pull God out of the machine box. Let's just literal... Oh, God.
Well, it's made by gods, right? It's made by the new gods.
Yeah, I guess.
But it is.
I know, they're supposed to be gods just like Olympic gods or Babylonian gods or whatever the fuck. They're supposed to be gods just like all the other gods. I get that, but I don't know.
But that's why it's funny that they made the Deus Ex Machina, like literally.
Yeah, because they are so wonderfully literal. So are there any characters in here that you guys were able to cling on to? Because if you clinged on to them, it means that they did something that you liked. And that there was some character meat there to hang on to.
The only person I think that, well, at least in the Justice League, was Aquaman. And the reason is because he was like the leader of this in this comic. He took the leadership role, particularly when they were traveling through time.
Yeah.
But he didn't do anything aquatic. You know?
Yeah, actually...
He did some watery stuff, right? With, like, an arm or something.
I don't know.
I didn't realize he had telepathic powers that were, like, not fish-oriented.
Oh, yeah. Talk to Andy about that. He'll tell you all about Aquaman.
Aquaman is fucking awesome, all right? And I have had this opinion for a long time. Like, apparently now Aquaman is in vogue because Geoff Johns is writing Aquaman, so he's like, oh, Aquaman's badass all of a sudden. No, he's been badass for a long time, right?
Long time is a relative term.
Well, like, his power set has almost always been that he has hydrokinetic powers, right?
Yeah.
Which is just like, just imagine everything, everybody knows that Magneto's a badass, right? Because he can control metal with his mind, right? This is the same fucking thing, just with water, which is way more prevalent. There's water in everything.
There's metal in everything, too.
Yeah, but like, okay, if you want to control a person's body with metal, you apparently have to get them drunk and stick them in the ass with a giant syringe of, I don't know, I guess it was liquid iron. I don't know how I didn't kill the guy in the movie, but whatever.
It was in his butt, that's why.
All that jelly donut butt. But like, dude, you can bloodbend just walking around.
Okay, now you're doing a crossover.
But that's what he could do. He could do that. It seems way more useful. And there's so much more potential for badassery. And all they ever do is make him talk to fish. And even in here, they make him talk to, like, some giant mutant whale thing.
Actually, Andy, well, in this comic, yeah, but have you ever watched the cartoon? I'm going on a tangent.
That's sorry, fine.
Listeners. The Brave and the Bold cartoon?
I've seen, like, 2 or 3 episodes.
Because Aquaman is all about the hydrokinesis and that. He, like, makes swords and stuff. You'd love it.
Good. Plus, he has a fucking hook for a hand. I don't care. That's cool. Sorry, that's my
right. Except when he shoots the hook out and it's got, like, a tether. And you're like, where's he hiding the tether?
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think he does that in here, does he? I don't remember. But
no, I think so he just does that in the JLA animated series cartoon. That's where I've seen it before.
Okay, I didn't know if that was actually a comic.
That gets super sad when like he shoots it out and it like gets blocked by a shield and just falls to the ground. And like, oh, that's just like a metaphor for impotence, isn't it? Just flop, there it is.
And then he like,
and then what do you got to do?
He reels it back in like it's...
Yeah.
But where does the go?
How does he reel it in? He doesn't have a hand. There's no like trigger mechanism to reel it back in. Doesn't make sense.
Where's the cable?
In like the there's like a cup at the end of his hand.
Bro, it is a thick cable.
Yeah.
Wait, are we discussing like how realistic comics are? Because
okay, yeah.
That's a wormhole there.
So, is there anybody else you guys liked?
Old Man Batman's cool too.
Old Flash, he's pudgy, asthmatic, and sad. And he's not, like, just pitiful sad. He's just filled with despair.
He does literally nothing.
Yes.
I like him just because I feel like Grant Morrison was like, oh, Flash, you think you're so cool? I'm going to shit all over you. And I'm like, no, someone's got to like Fat Flash. Someone has to because I feel so bad for him. So I'm going to like him.
Okay, good. Because there's a thing that happens in Flash comics, and this isn't the first time. Like, apparently the worst thing you can do to Flash is make him fat. And I think it's, like, one of his, like, greatest nightmares is being fat. And it's, like, to a certain extent, I understand where that comes from character-wise, except when so many of your readers are fat people, you know? Like, oh, being fat should make you feel like shit. It feels a little weird to read that sometimes. Like, oh, you're fat, you must be useless. Come on, give him something to do. Make him useful somehow. Have him, like, stand in the back and talk about the Speed Force, at least.
Remember those times, guys, when I was fast?
Like, how...
That would be useful right now. Was that what he would say?
No, there's, like, who is it? What the hell's her name? Argyle? No, that's not right.
Argent.
Argent, yes. Oh, man, Argyle would have been way sicker, though. Like, Argent has light powers. He could, like, tell her about speed and light, like, speed, light, force. I don't fucking know.
But Green Lantern gives her tips.
I know. It's just there's nobody for him to give tips. He can't be a wise sage for anybody. He just sits there fat in this corner, sad. It's depressing.
You know,
it sends a bad image to other fat
people. It's not that depressing because he's, like, barely in it.
That's true.
He's, like, the redheaded guy in the back.
Yeah, that's how useless fat people are.
Except he's jumping pretty well when they come out of the boom tube. He's got a good superhero pose going on.
Yeah, and you muster up all your fat leg strength and just, brah. Okay, so listeners, in case you don't know, I used to be incredibly obese, and I'm not just, like, shitting on fat people right now. And I'm still pretty overweight. I'm not like being hella mean or anything. I just want to let everybody know. So, okay, we got Fat Flash and old Arthur Curry are the ones that we like so far. Is there anybody else in this comic?
Well, okay, actually, I'm going to continue. The old superheroes in the future were actually all kind of cool. Like, the old Connor Queen was kind of neat. Because he was, like, acting like his dad would. I mean, he's even got the same facial hair.
Yeah.
And then Adam. I feel like that's the kind of thing that Adam and Green Arrow would do.
Yep.
It's like, I'm going to shoot the Adam, and he's going to go in Darkseid's ear or something. I don't think that's what he ended up doing, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I think didn't he end up, like, going into stomach or, I don't know, some weird shit.
Yeah, he went through the force field because the light.
He became, like, the size of the photon and went in with the light because he was like, Darkseid must be able to see. So that light can get in. And then he danced on his brain, just like in Identity Crisis.
Yep.
That was not so good.
I mean, he was like, you have four hemispheres. Oh, no, that was Black Racer saying that.
Was it? Oh, no, I thought it was Adam.
Because
he was like, what am I going to shoot first? Because apparently Darkseid's like a Ferengi.
Yes, nice reference.
Lobes, I see what you did there. Sorry, I was a little slow.
No, Ferengi do have four lobe brains.
Yeah, along with whatever the fuck Deanna Troi is.
Wait,
because that's how they're
going to Does she only have three lobes?
No, I think she has two. I think she only has two.
Wait.
She only has two, but she can't read Ferengi because they have four.
Is that how that works?
Apparently. But isn't she only half of whatever?
Yeah. Like if I found a human who had one brain lobe, I could read him?
Yes. Yeah,
that's how it works.
Oh, good to know.
You just have to have double the lobes.
Oh, this is weird.
What about, like, okay.
We're like barely talking about Darkseid.
So at the first, it's because I feel like he might not have been the primary villain in this. Like, we get a good sense of how
he was.
Because it's half Lex, half Darkseid.
In the Darkseid parts, he's definitely the main villain, but he doesn't do anything. He's all about machinations.
Yes.
Until Ray Palmer dances on his brain, and then he gets a stomachache or something. Oh, and then we get the Orion cameo where I don't even know what he does. He, like, blows stuff up.
It doesn't even matter. The point is he should have been there helping, and he was being a little bitch. Sorry, I don't like Orion most of the time, and I don't like him in this. But, like, I will say there's the one thing that I was really disappointed in with this comic, aside from everything else that we've talked about already. Because we're talking about character, right? Lex Luthor. And this, I think, is kind of cool, except that he basically has the DC version of the Infinity Gauntlet, right? Like, they said, if it's in your hand, you can control all of whatever. Your thought becomes will. And he, like, just utterly fucking sucks at it.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's like, four issues after, he's like, I'm going to make a corporate takeover of the Justice League. And, like, there's emphasis on it being a corporate takeover for some reason. I don't know. And then there's, like, I don't know what about this made it a corporate takeover when in the end he was like, I've got the Philosopher's Stone. That's not a corporate takeover. That's just
bombs in your house.
Right? But it was so sad because at the end of the first issue, Batman was like, I know who the fuck is doing this. I figured this out. I'm a businessman. I'm gonna do like a hostile takeover before he can do the other thing, and it's gonna be all corporate war. And then that's it. Just never mentioned again, just left off there.
He does kind of throw money at the problem, though. He does pay off Mirror Master.
True.
Yeah, I guess he does do that. But isn't a statement at the end like, you got corporate-owned, bitch? Except all he did was just pay people?
And that wouldn't make any sense to Lex. It's like, why is Batman telling me this? Because Lex doesn't know that he's Bruce Wayne.
Right? Doesn't that almost tip your hand?
No, because I bet Lex would just be like, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
I had a huge problem with this beyond what we've just discussed. And
Okay. Oh, the Wurlagog thing?
No, not the Wurlagog. Well, partly that, but we'll how Lex Luthor plays the boardroom thing. So part of me wants to justify it and say, okay, he wants to do things on his own terms so he can revel in his own intelligence. At the same time, you have the fucking Infinity Gauntlet, basically. Just use it. And that's the problem. This is... Okay, so... Do you guys play D&D?
Once.
I have once. Before. Not on the regular.
So, a kind of big thing is that if your character has 20 int, which is like super godlike intelligence, you can't effectively roleplay that character. And I think... that analogy carries over to writing really intelligent characters. You have to be as intelligent as the person you're writing, or you have to dumb them down. Otherwise, you end up with a lot of, like, bullshit dialogue and characters who are doing things that don't make sense because you are writing at a level above what you can actually think at. And I'm not saying that Grant Morrison's stupid. But the issue here is Lex Luthor is supposed to be smarter than all of us. Like any of us combined.
Yeah.
He's smarter than you, than me, than Grant Morrison, right? That's his big deal. So if you're writing Lex Luthor, you can't really explore all of his tactics and motives. It doesn't work if you sit down and have the big speech where he outlines all of his evil plan. Because as the sad people we are, we can't comprehend Lex Luthor's, you know, amazing plan. We're not supposed to be able to because he's supposed to be that bright. And I don't know. It just, it feels like this was too much of a super intelligent villain being written by a normal human being. And it's a pitfall that some writers stumble into. And it drove me nuts here because I felt like Lex Luthor was doing it all wrong. And I'm not saying I could have necessarily written it better. But it wasn't great to read.
It's tough. And I feel like in Infinity Gauntlet, it was done better because instead of making it a matter of intelligence, right? Not only did they show you that this is existentially difficult to grip your head around and control, they show you that by giving the gauntlet to other people and having them fuck it up. But they tell you at the end, Thanos isn't... He is not going to lose this battle because he isn't smart enough. He's smart enough to do this. He knows how to do it right. He can do it. He became Eternity for a second there. He knows how this works. He can get his head around it. His problem isn't his intelligence. His problem is he has a deep-seated subconscious personality flaw. And that flaw in his person is what will be his downfall, not his intelligence. And I don't know if Lex has a flaw the same way. Maybe it's hubris. But if you have the power of God in your hand, hubris is kind of taken out of the equation. Right? I mean, you can't be so prideful that it offends the gods when you are one of them.
Yeah.
It doesn't... I think that's part of... Like, his downfall has always been his hubris, his overambition. But that's not... That doesn't matter here. You can't have more ambition than what you have in your hand. You have the power of reality in your hand. There's nothing to get more ambition to... Like, there is nowhere else to go above that. You have it. That can't be a flaw anymore.
Hmm.
Boom. That's what happened to him.
Did we just get Morrisoned?
I think so.
Maybe. This is also the first time we've ever read Electric Blue Superman.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Do you guys like him or not?
I was hoping someone could explain why he turned blue.
Yeah, we didn't really get much of him. He acted like Superman.
He is Superman.
Right, I know, but he had like normal mannerisms, is in my opinion, but we didn't. I mean, he got turned into radio waves and.
Superman Red and Superman Blue begin in 1990. Storyline: while temporarily deprived of the solar energy needed to provide the energy his body required to give him powers, Superman developed electricity-based abilities, which eventually forced him to adopt a blue and white containment suit to prevent the energy dispersing. While retaining most of his abilities, he could not also generate electric attacks rather than his original heat vision. He also gained the ability to turn his powers off, though this left him as vulnerable as a normal human. This version of Superman was referred to some as Electric Blue.
Hmm.
So I guess while he was starved of the sun energy, he's like, hey, electricity, like ambient solar power kind of a thing. But in tapping that energy, it transformed his power base into this. Okay. Which, like, it's kind of neat. I like that they wanted to change it up a little bit, but it's like he still has super strength, super speed, super intelligence. Like, he has almost everything he had before, plus these other cool things, you know?
Yeah.
He's kind of like...
puzzling. Grant Morrison is kind of hailed as one of the greatest Superman writers of all time. And I think All-Star Superman came after this, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Far after.
Rather after. But at the same time, I feel like some of that core character would have remained, you know, like it had been a seed for it the whole time, not just seeing some guy looking thoughtful at Comic-Con. And this felt very different from Morrison's other writing of Superman. It didn't feel like this was the kind of, like, beginning Superman or the idea from which he worked. But maybe that's the issue with none of these characters felt very character-like.
Well, I think that's a danger in team books, is you can... that it can slip into that where nobody
has anything a unique special, enough personality, right? Yeah.
And I think All-Star Superman is definitely one of the best Superman stories out there. But, I mean, I get what you're saying. It doesn't seem... the transition from what we're seeing here to All-Star Superman, it seems like a large leap. But, you know, I mean, this is a book that it's in continuity, and so, you know, there's a bit of a requirement to stay consistent with, to some degree, with what the writer before had done too.
Yeah,
true.
And you got to make it relevant and graspable for his own book, you know.
I just kind of feel like, I mean, at the end, we see Superman being fairly kind to Lex Luthor and saying, like, I know you're a good guy, but Superman seems far more thoughtful and magnanimous than he seemed here. He seemed very disconnected from everyone. And yes. I know he was, like, pretending to be dead for 5 minutes of it, but, eh.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's just a general character problem with this, and that... like, if you try to sit down and think of, like, 3 or 4 adjectives to describe any one character, they're all going to share maybe 1 or 2 of them at least, you know? They're just all kind of the same, and I feel like that doesn't do any favors for a team book like this, because then you just have 6 copies of the same dude with different power sets fulfilling a role that's required and not a role that their character would act out necessarily.
Yeah, except Batman. I feel like Batman was Batman was Batman.
He outsmarted Desaad, took over Desaad, outsmarted Darkseid, and was part of killing Darkseid. That is Batman. Use that brain. So what do we think about the art in this one?
It's not 90s art very much, which is good.
Yeah, late 90s. We're barely post-Pouch, but we're still not post-Tiny Feet.
It doesn't have the same degree of, like, you know, heavy inking that 90s art does. As you noted, Andy, it's really heavy on the pencil work.
Yeah, there is so much, like, there's a lot of good pencil work in here. Like, when they're in the Darkseid future, one of the little details I liked was the hands covering the faces, like the helmets that they wear. I saw those and was like, ooh, that's kind of cool. I see what they did there. That's neat. This works for me. I like it. That's cool. Like, that sort of, like, weird freakiness that you can see, like, oh, I get it. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. Like, that's the kind of saying people do, but they're doing it completely and entirely, and it's a helmet that symbolizes what the anti-life is doing to these people by just removing all sensory perception and decision. They have become the will of dark. Like, just in that visual thing, you're showing your readers, like, that's awesome, great idea. And then there's also, like, pages that just, I don't know, are bad. You know?
Yeah.
There's some that's great and there's some that's not great, and that's what happens when you just have a shitload of pencil work.
I did not read an artist bio, but it feels like either this artist was kind of maybe starting out in the field, because obviously some of this is really, really good, or you know, was just rushed. I don't know which, but some of it was, like, the proportions were off a little. The faces sometimes didn't look quite right. I don't know.
There's a note here about the about a cover. Which one was it?
Issue number 10, which is the first one in Rock of Ages. It shows the Injustice Gang grinning in the most evil manner. But they're supposed to look evil to me. They look very disproportionate and just kind of nightmare-inducing. I wasn't a fan of that cover, but later covers I did like. Issue 11, I can't actually remember what was
the
one on
with
it.
The maze?
Yes, that was a pretty cool one.
That one, I do like that one a lot. I don't know. In general, the art's just like, there's just a lot of pencil work. There's a lot of crap in the background. There's a lot of crap in the foreground. There's a lot of just extra crap laying all over the place. And some of the crap is great crap, like really tasty crap. And some of it just is like really shitty crap.
You know what's impressive, though? I did not have a single moment where I felt like the artist and the writer were competing with each other. I think that they worked together really well to present this story in that, you know, we were being shown things that we weren't being told. We were being told things we weren't being shown. And if the two ever collided, it was in a very elegant manner that really enhanced what was happening instead of making me feel like there was a lot of redundancy or like I was, you know, being treated like an idiot.
You know, that's true. I hadn't thought about that, but you're definitely right.
I think, I don't know, I feel like the art and the writing were really rough in places, but sometimes they came together in a very elegant manner. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm inclined to be very forgiving on that. Just, I enjoyed that.
I think if I'm going to have any one singular complaint about the art, other than quantity does not make quality, it's kind of like the faces. All of the dudes, like, half the time you see any given one of them, right? So half of the time a male face is drawn, which is everybody in this book, by the way. There's not, I mean, Wonder Woman's in it, but she's not in it, come on. Like, when her face is, like, everybody has the same half mouth open face. Even when they're shouting, when they're talking quietly, it's just that, like, jaw dropped face. Almost all the time, everybody has that face.
Yeah, at first I thought it was that they were, like, really melodramatic, and then it wasn't that, so I was a bit thrown off. And I actually complained about that a bit in the notes and was like, Green Arrow is making histrionics, and it's, ugh. But, yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Wonder World was sweet. As busy as it was pretty visually interesting.
I imagine as an artist that's really fun when the writer just says, put a bunch of weird shit in the background right here. You're like, yes! I'm going to draw all kinds of crazy shit! So then let's get into the meat of this, because we're doing Darkseid versus Thanos. Right? And we said this is maybe a decent representation of Darkseid. He's one for machinations and not one to be punching planets that get thrown at him. Right? Do we feel like Darkseid is better than Thanos, or Thanos is better than Darkseid?
Thanos is so winning for me right now. Because, you know what? If you're going to put all your faith in your generals as a leader, you damn well better be able to figure out when one of them is no longer your general, but is instead Batman.
That's true. That was a really bad error on his part.
If he's so powerful and godlike and cool, why did Batman trick him? I mean, it seems like his whole thing is brawn, and even though Thanos used a lot of physical force to get what he wanted, he had far more brains.
And he used that force after getting the gauntlet. Like, he uses intelligence to outwit people so that he could get to the gauntlet. He used strength in that process, too, but, I mean, he tricked his mistress and it helped giving him the power required to obtain that gauntlet, you know? And then when we see him, he's super powerful because he has the gauntlet, but he got that by being smart.
Yeah, and I don't know. I also feel like Thanos as a character had a lot more drive. He basically was... He was so intense on getting Death to love him. It felt like he had a very reasonable reason to do all these, well, not reasonable, but it was, it made sense that he was doing all this crap. And I never have been a fan of the anti-life equation, because it's like, okay, if you like anti-life, you acknowledge that there's nothing but dark side and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, what's the point? It's self-serving and completely nihilistic. And they mentioned that Thanos is nihilistic, but his nihilism has a focus in Mistress Death. Whereas Darkseid is just... maybe it's that we're not meant to understand the workings of a god, but it doesn't feel like that. It feels like someone who's really bored and wants to just see death and destruction for no reason.
What about you, David? Who's winning for you?
Well, based on just what we've read, I have to agree with Jen and say Thanos. I think this is a good representation of the type of person, I guess, that Thanos or Darkseid is. But he's not really fleshed out that well here.
Yeah.
And I feel like when we watch the Superman the animated series stuff for next week, we'll get a better, more well-rounded version of Darkseid. Another good representation of him is that's in the animated form is the Superman Batman Apocalypse.
Yeah, that's a good
cartoon movie with Supergirl, the one with Summer Glau as Supergirl.
Yep, I got that.
That, I think Darkseid's really good in that, too. So, yeah, I think based on the two things we've read, it definitely Thanos is winning. But I know the potential of Darkseid, so.
Yeah, we'll see. And I think that's exactly it, is I'm disappointed by this because I know Darkseid's potential, right? And I love Darkseid. If it's up to me and I had to, like, write a villain for a comic book or have a villain be in a comic book that I'm reading, I would rather it be Darkseid over Thanos. But just looking at these two, and I want to focus on what beat them, right? Like, Thanos wasn't defeated by an outside force. He was defeated by himself and his own subconscious self-acknowledgement of his hubris. Like, that sort of existential inward thing is what destroys him in the end. Because, really, he succeeded. He became Eternity. he had that shit down. It was no problem. You know? And, like, his undoing was of his own make. Whereas Darkseid here is beaten by the Atom and the Green Arrow. Two of the lamest people in the Justice League.
Didn't Orion actually beat him by resetting the universe with the Genesis Cube?
I think, I don't know, Morrison.
Did right. that happen, or?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I'm calling that Morrison's. Yes. Morrison's way of sort of destroying this parallel universe so he doesn't have to worry about writing it again later.
Yeah, the end was pretty confusing.
Yeah, so. But as far as I understand, they did a couple tricks with, like, a light arrow, or what was it, a light grenade, like a flashbang arrow, and Ray Palmer getting through his vision because nothing gets through the shield, but obviously he can see people, so light gets through, and then, like, him tap dancing on Darkseid's brain. Like, that is just fucking humiliating.
Well, he was shooting lasers, too.
Yeah, I know, but it's the Atom, and that's just sad. I don't know. I just... Which then, I mean, why don't you just have the Atom fight everybody? The same way the Justice League should just be the Atom and Martian Manhunter. Martian Manhunter solves all the crimes, figures out everybody's plan, and then the Atom can always just shrink down to the size of a photon, get in somebody's head through light, and then just blast at their brain. Like, problem solved. But I'm disappointed because I know how awesome Darkseid can be. Like, you mentioned the Batman Superman, was it Apocalypse was the name of it? The Supergirl movie? So what Darkseid's really good at in the DC Universe, and why I'm really sad they didn't do it here, is utilizing his boom tube technology to be anywhere at any moment. Like, his big thing is showing up in your home when you don't want it. One of my favorite examples is Countdown to Final Crisis. Everybody thinks that they've killed Darkseid. They go home. It's going to be really nice. They're going home to their wives. They're going home to their kids. They're going home to take a shower. Mary Marvel is going back home to take a shower. and she's starting to take off her uniform. She walks into her front door, and there's Darkseid just chilling on her couch. Like, sitting down with his legs crossed and everything. Just, like, chilling there. In her fucking living room. And he's great at being absolutely terrifying on a personal level. The idea that he could just show up on your fucking couch like it's no big thing. But there's none of that here. We get none of that here. So it's got to, for me at this point, it's got just what we read, it's got to be Thanos. Because this is a sad, sad dark side. I think it's once he's already conquered the world, he's gotten too complacent and he's put his guard down. And that's why old fat Flash and all of them have been able to come up and beat him. It's kind of disappointing. So anyway, you guys want to rate this one?
Sure.
Sure.
All right, Jen, you go first.
Okay. This was kind of a mess. It was actually like I was more engaged than I was when we read Infinity Gauntlet. But I, looking back, I'm now like, in hindsight, Infinity Gauntlet was a much better comic. It's that weird thing where this held my engagement, even though the whole time I was like, don't stop it. And then Infinity Gauntlet, where I was like, I can see why everyone loves this, but I can't get into it. It's that thing. So I actually am really in turmoil about how I want to rate this, because if last week I rated based on engagement, this week I should, but I really don't want to give this a good rating. I'm going to give it a 2.5 and call it average, because, yeah, the art was good in places, and it was really rough in others. The writing was strong in places, and it was really rough in others. And overall, I think we got some real nice bits of art and writing and some really interesting narration going on and some good dialogue in a comic that was a bit confusing and hard to read and shouldn't have been. So when I say this is average, I don't mean this is like, as a comic. I mean, it's pretty extreme. It's not going to be forgettable. I will probably remember this one for a long time and be like, hey, remember that time in Rock of Ages? But it had enough bad to balance out the good, where it's mediocre.
I was also going to say, we say that about Spawn, too.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, being memorable does count for something, right? I talk to people about how Spawn is the worst comic I've ever read, but that makes them want to go out and buy an issue of it. So,
if they do, let me know. I want to sell mine.
Okay, I will.
I've got Volume 1 and Volume 2 because they were on sale, and I didn't know why, and I just bought them, and now I have them, and I don't want them.
Didn't you post on Facebook a while ago that those were free?
And nobody wanted them.
You actually tried to give them to me once. I did not want them either.
Somebody please take my Spawn comics.
Nah.
Not gonna happen. Nah.
All right, David, how about you?
I'm going to go with a 2.5 as well. I actually enjoyed reading it. It was an enjoyable read. Like Jen, I was engaged the entire time. But like I said, I feel like this is just a surface. We're just dusting the surface of Darkseid. And I think that's because this isn't really a Darkseid comic. Like you said, Andy, it's kind of split between Darkseid and Lex Luthor, and it's really more about the
Injustice Gang.
Well, it's even more about them. It's about the Justice League, kind of. Like, that's the biggest problem with this comic, is what you said, Andy, that there's no character development. All these things happen, and there's movement, and you just don't, like, I don't know what I feel like there is an impact in that we get the foreshadowing, and I kind of Googled it, and so that Superman that we see in the shadows is actually from DC 1 million. Do you remember that storyline, Andy?
From the year 1 million.
Yeah. So like I said, this thing is like, you know, we have this big thing with Darkseid ruling the Earth, and then Lex Luthor has this all-powerful Infinity Gauntlet-esque object, but nothing really happens, right? I think the biggest thing that happened is that Aztec and Green Arrow quit the team at the end. Oh, no, sorry. The thing we totally did not talk about is the fact that Superman breaks up the band at the end.
Oh, yeah.
It barely matters.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter. So that's the thing with this comic. Is like, it's a fun read and some cool things happen, but none of it seems to matter that much. Even the bomb that's dropped at the end. We didn't even talk about it. And so I think this is it's a good read, but if you really want to read a Darkseid story, this isn't it. Maybe go find the whole Fourth World Jack Kirby collection. That's probably a much better Darkseid read.
Yeah, or what's the Orion comic that we read before too? Was actually not a bad Darkseid.
Oh, the one where they fight, the Walt Simonson one.
Yeah, that awesome issue of just fighting. Read that issue if you just want to.
I don't remember what that one was called, but go back, people, and look at our old episodes. It's there in the Walt Simonson series. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty average. So yeah, 2.5.
Okay. I wish I could remember what I gave New X-Men, because I feel like this is a story that's cool but would have been better if it wasn't written by Grant Morrison. And by that I mean I know I don't like Grant Morrison, and so I don't want to write it down just because it's Grant Morrison, but I think I don't like it because it's Grant Morrison. Like, the story, the things that happen are compelling, and the characters could be better developed, but whatever. It's a team book, and it's about the story. It's about the plot. We're reading a Cape comic in the greatest essence of the word. This is just, oh, man, Darkseid's taking over the world. What are they going to do when the Flash is fat? Oh, no! Like, that kind of a thing. Except every time I'm like, all right, cool, I'm ruling with this. I'm good to go. I'm good to go. This is cool. This is fun. Hyper, what the fuck, space-time thing, huh? Like, it stops me when I'm reading. Just like whenever I'd be reading along with New X-Men, be like, yeah, cool, I'm down with this. Wait, fetal infanticide? Huh? What the hell is this fetus doing here? It's like the same kind of thing, but not as bad. And I think in this, I could have abided it better if, what did you call it, Jen? Blunt force reading?
I think so, yeah.
If I could do blunt force reading, maybe I could have abided all this stuff. I'm a very slow reader, and so for me, I can't do that blunt force kind of reading. I can't power through a thing. I get pulled out by every little thing that's just off kilter, and so this just was difficult for me to read. And I'm pretty sure I gave New X-Men like a half, or like a one, so I'm going to give this like a 1.5. It's just, there's no character development. There's points in the art where it's good, but I think for every point in the art that it's good, every dude's face looks the same. They all have the same expression. Like, for everything that's good about this, there's something bad. And it's a fun read, sure, but fuck, there are a million comics out there that are a fun read that have character development. There are a million comics out there that have a fun read that have better art. There are a million comics out there that are fun read and do things better than this comic does. So I don't really want to call it average. And it doesn't quite even feel like a 2 for me, because I never feel like the JLA was threatened. It was just like, okay, I just got to wait and find out how they're going to get out of it. Just got to wait and find out. There's no like, oh shit, they're really fucked now. Just, all right, give it some time. Hyper, whatever the fuck, with the word Lagog from Mamorod will show up. What's funny is that actually happens in this. You know, Metron's going to bring the word Lagog from Mamorod, from Our Man from the year 85,000. What the fuck is going... Yeah, 2. I'm giving this a 2. I don't know. It's a 2. And so because this is a 2, and because it wasn't really Darkseid, we're gonna call a mulligan and do best of 3. And next week we're going to watch Legacy, which is a two-part episode from Superman the Animated Series. It's actually the last two episodes of that show, Superman the Animated Series. That's from the year 2000. Well, at least it came out originally. Yeah, original air date, 2000. It's the last two episodes from season 3, which is 12 and 13, if you want to download them. You can buy them on Amazon. They're only $2 an episode. They're really good. They're, like, amazingly good. This show was really good.
Man, honestly, people, but just buying the DVD, the whole show is worth buying. If you, you know, if you have the spare cash and you, I would say just buy the DVD set because it's awesome.
Yeah.
I have it. I've watched it many times.
Yeah, and what the hell is the guy's name? Michael Ironside, who voices Darkseid. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It's a fucking great job of voice work. There's so much good voice work in it. So I can't wait to watch this because I feel like Thanos opened up the fight, Darkseid showed up and got punched right in the mouth. And now he's like, all right, but I'm going to get back up and I'm going to hit you back. And that's what we're going to watch next week. So if I said through that too fast or I stuttered too much or whatever, if you don't know what those episodes are, go to www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. On the right, click on Future Shows. And there will be a little button under a little picture of Darkseid that'll say Amazon. Click on that, and it'll take you right to the Amazon page where you can buy these episodes. It's right there. It says Legacy Part 1, Legacy Part 2, Episode 12, Episode 13. $2. Cheap, fun to watch, and it's Amazon. You're going to watch it from like a million devices whenever you want, all that kind of good shit. Whatever. You can do it. If you feel like we should watch more animated television, because apparently it's fucking awesome, and maybe we should. I don't know. Let us know by sending us an email at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Or if you want to send us a link, but you want it to be like all like media with the socials, you could send it to us through Facebook.com/APSupercast or Twitter.com/APSupercast. Man, that was really sloppy. Facebook with the socials and the media, whatever. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Until next week.
Bye. Goodbye.